What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Pizza Tower is the game for this week's episode. Pizza Tower is a fast-paced 2D action platformer developed and published by Tour de Pizza and released in 2023. The game is available on PC and Switch only, so no other consoles. And the way I'd kind of describe this game in a nutshell, it has fast, almost Sonic-like 2D levels, but really extensive moveset, not just like run straight through like the old Sonic games. It really has a clear moveset, clear physics that do take time to understand. It does have some tough platforming and challenges, some that are timed that really I think can be sometimes frustrating, but other times a really good challenge to kind of get yourself up for. And it has like levels with arcade ranking at the end. So a lot of similarities with Ninja Gaiden Ragebound that we talked about a few episodes back. You know, just levels going in, collecting a certain amount of things. So think like Crash Bandicoot or Bat Boy. But also a lot of connections with old Game Boy games like the Super Mario Land games and Wario Land. The aesthetics in this game are super funky, super fun. It reminds a lot of 90s cartoons, specifically like Ren and Stimpy kind of comes to mind with the visuals and just over-the-top pizza-themed stuff and a killer soundtrack to boot. The game released with an MSRP of $19.99. And on howlongtobeat.com, it says you can run straight through in 8 hours beating all the levels, but to get everything in the game, and there are a lot of collectibles, challenges, again, compared to like Crash Bandicoot with the different gems and crystals and stuff like that, it might take you over 40 hours to get everything in this game. There's really an extensive list of collectibles and challenges and things like that. I have been playing it on Switch, and I got it on sale for $9.99, so half off, and I put in probably about 5 hours. I'm trying to be thorough. I'm definitely not getting all the collectibles. I'm doing what I can. There are 5 floors in the game. I'm on the 3rd floor. So I would say, you know, with being thorough, I'm about halfway through the game. The game also has physical releases through Fangamer, and this is just for the Switch edition. They have the standard just in the box, as well as a collector's edition. The standard edition goes for $35, and the collector's edition, which has a ton of other things, I think even a plushie, it goes for $79. But on Fangamer, they also have a ton of other stuff, like plushies and t-shirts and pins and all kinds of things like that, and they also have the vinyl soundtrack, which is available for $39. Like I said, the developer is Tour de Pizza. This is a small team. I think it's centered around one person, maybe a couple extra people around them. I don't know where they're based out of, but as far as I can see, this is their first major game. And I heard about this game through Dustin Furman, who is on Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, as well as Punching Up. Those podcasts, he talked about this a while back, maybe about a year ago. I just kind of mentioned passively that he was playing it and then it was a cool game. So it kind of put it on my radar. And then when I saw it on sale on Switch, I decided to dive in. All right, let's talk gameplay for A Pizza Tower. And let's start with just the basic setup and progression, how you go through the game. So I've already made some comparisons to certain games, but the game functions very similarly to games that have a hub world. So this game has like a hub world where you're just kind of moving around. You can do all the things that you would normally do in the level in terms of like just moveset, but you're moving around. So think like Crash Bandicoot 2 and 3, where you can, you know, walk around, pick the different levels, as well as like Super Mario 64. It's not as extensive as like the castle in Super Mario 64, but you can like still go up levels and do platforming in this hub world to choose which level you're going to go to next. So you're able to walk around and see what levels are available. You'll also be able to see the levels that you've already gone to and your progress, the past results, so what you collected in there, what progress you did, like how you were ranked in that level. And once you beat the levels, you will get enough of sort of a currency to unlock the boss level for that floor. And then you need to go into the boss level, beat the boss to unlock the next floor. Again, very similar to Crash Bandicoot. There are a lot of things that you're going to collect in level, and we'll eventually talk about it. So again, think like crystals and gems from Crash Bandicoot or all the stars in, you know, a Super Mario 64 level. So we'll get into all that. But first, let's start with just some of the 2D basics of like how you're moving around. So the game is in 2D. You can move left and right and you can jump, but there's no grab. Like you can't ledge grab or you can't like, you know, just straight up wall grab. You can crouch while you're moving to kind of lower down and get in smaller crevices. You can grab just as you're moving. And when he does that, he kind of lunges at things. When you're in midair, you can press down and he'll do like a ground pound. Now, where the game gets interesting is if you hold R, which I guess on a Switch Pro controller, I guess that's R, not ZR. But if you hold R while you're moving left or right, you will speed up and then go faster in that direction. So this is straight out of Sonic. It's a bit more complex, but it is manageable. So the longer that you hold it and that you're able to move in a space, you will get faster and faster and your momentum will gain higher and higher. Now, you can change directions while you're speeding up, but there's kind of like a little skirt animation where like, you know, your character still has momentum. So it's really kind of being true to the physics of it. Like if you were to be going very fast and then you try to change directions, like your character is going to keep going in that direction, even though they're facing the other direction, just so you can kind of change your momentum. So you will need some space to do this. You actually can fall off of a ledge while you're trying to direction change. It's a bit silly, but I think it's realistic, and so that it makes it work. You can also actually go on to another screen if there's an opening, like you would move on to the other screen, but it'll still continue the same animation and the same movement. So, you know, you'll poke your head into the next room, and then as you speed up the other direction, you'll go back into that room. While you are moving fast, you can also crouch to keep that momentum, but roll through smaller spaces. This is something you're going to have to do. Other things, while you are in this kind of speedy mode, you can press and hold the up button to sort of flatten and turn yourself into like a spring or something. So when you hold up, your character will flatten like a pancake and you can still move side to side, but you have to keep holding up and you can like move yourself to get under where you want to shoot up to. And your character will just kind of keep shooting up until they hit something. So it's a way to get to higher places. It is a little difficult or a little touchy with this. I prefer to use the D-pad. I started out playing this game using the joystick and it just, things like this, like flattening and shooting up, like it happened when I didn't even mean to do it. Sometimes I was really struggling with like trying to lower down and crouch to get through smaller crevices while I was moving fast. So I highly recommend you use the D-pad just to avoid any false touches. Once you're moving fast, there are a couple ways that you can stop. The most obvious way would just be to kind of let go of the joystick and the controller. I think you just need to let go of the joystick, but I wind up letting go of that and the R button. So then if you do that, like your character will just kind of stop. Or you can run into a flat perpendicular wall, basically just run right into the wall and your character will slam into it. But you need to be careful about jumping because as we get to a more advanced understanding of how you move, things can get very fast. And a lot of these platforms or these areas are not very long stretches. Sometimes you're going to have very small areas and you find that like if you are constantly holding the R button, like it's going to be very difficult. So it's like a combination of moving fast at some spots and then like slowing down and doing simple jumping and platforming. Either way, you're going to have to make quick decisions, most notably when you're moving fast, but also in other occurrences, which we'll talk about. And so moving fast and trying to make quick decisions, the button sensitivity is really going to be a big deal. even though I'm using the D-pad, there are times where I'm trying to do the flatten thing so I can shoot up and it's just not registering. So I don't know if that's, you know, me trying to keep moving side to side and hitting the up button or whatever and it not registering, but just be aware of that. Sometimes there are unintentional movements, but I also wouldn't say that it's not intentional because I do think it adds to the silliness of, again, trying to change your momentum back and forth. What your character does in those moments is kind of fun and silly, but just be aware of that because with a lot of these fast sequences, you might get frustrated. One of the things that you will do as you're trying to navigate these levels is you can run up a wall. So while your character is moving side to side, while you're holding the speedy button, instead of running right into a wall, if you jump at the wall that's like perpendicular, that's going straight up, your character will ride up the wall. And then if that wall leads to a platform, it will stand on that platform and then keep going. So there's a lot of this like building momentum and jumping at quick decisions in quick intervals that can really get your character to traverse like these complex level layouts very quickly if you know what you're doing. Now, sometimes you're going to do it unintentionally and just like accidentally go all the way across the screen and you didn't mean to, like you meant to stop like 5 feet ago or whatever. But that really adds to the kinetic nature of this game and why I find it so enjoyable. It's just like sometimes you go too far and the silliness of the character, it's just like part of the entertainment value I feel. So also on top of being able to run up a wall, while you're running up a wall, you can also jump off onto another wall. So this is kind of an indirect way of doing wall jumping, but you really have to time it because your character is running up the wall. So you can find that like you'll jump to one wall and then on the other side and the other side and keep moving up. So if you're in a room where you need to go up to a higher level, this is one method of doing that. So on that topic, let's kind of explore more of the platforming. We already kind of touched on the traversal, but sort of how they combine. So layouts of the rooms, there are some rooms that have a lot of open space and high walls that lead up to a high ceiling, but then you're going to be in a lot of areas that are super cramped. So sort of like these cramped hallways that are only like the size of your character's height and then leading into, you know, a room that has a ramp that goes up and then a platform that you, once you go through the top of it, you can't jump back down. And so a lot of your rooms are going to be like going up a ramp and then you have to go the other way and then you go up another ramp and then you have to go. So sort of like zigzagging to get up to the top of a particular room. But there are going to be a lot slower things. So not just like running as fast as you can. There will be ladders in the environment that you can, you know, just walk up to get to the next platform. There will be a lot of platforms that you can jump up through, but not down. And in fact, most platforms you can't jump down. There are some things you can break as you're going down or down pounding. But most of the time, like if you're going up a ramp and then you see like a plank at the top, that's a platform that extends all the way. Once you go up through that, you can't go back down. So unless the room has like a loop-de-loop, and in fact, you'll have a lot of rooms that will only have sort of these one-way loops that once you start to go around it, like you have to go all the way and then come back to get to, you know, maybe if you left something at the beginning. And there will be like a new screen room to room we kind of talked about. So sometimes at the edge where if the tunnel keeps going and then, you know, the edge of the screen is there, you just keep going and you're going to another room. But a lot of times you'll be going indoors. And then as soon as you get to them, you just hit the up button and you'll go through sort of into a new room. Sometimes there'll be like a box at the top corner of a room that also acts like a portal into another room. So let's talk about obstructions as you're going through these rooms, because you're obviously not just going through blank hallways. There will be things in the way, and a lot of these are going to block your path. And as you're moving, there are things that you're going to break. So it's simple things like boxes. A lot of times there are going to be walls that you can break. Most of the time, not so obvious. Just visually, it's more by like the space that it looks like, you know, you could walk through, or like, oh, if I just keep going, you know, like I naturally do sometimes and slam into a wall, all of a sudden it opens up and I keep breaking through the wall and I find a secret. A lot of things as you, you know, just trial and error back and forth and slam into things, you will wind up breaking. There'll also be one-way gates. So like, you know, you might see a little face on a block that can be crushed, but it's only on one side. So you have to go all the way around. Again, sort of like those one-way loops we're talking about. Sometimes breaking these obstructions will require certain speed or a certain amount of momentum. Specifically, like the metal box requires you to be going so fast that it looks like there's like an arc of heat in front of you. So you have to find a way in the platforming in that space that you're occupying to gain enough momentum in order to break that that and go in there, which sometimes can actually be a challenge. Like if it's a small amount of space, you might have to go back and forth with like the skirt and the changing of momentum to build up enough to do that. And the game is good about sort of telling you that. And let's talk about the environment or just the level, like things that you'll interact with. So one of the things is avoiding pits. And the first time you see a pit in a level, you'll see like sort of the triangle exclamation point sign trying to warn you like, hey, you can't fall down here. There aren't really drastic consequences, but when you fall in a pit, you'll kind of get reset back to the last place you were. There'll be some puzzles. So a lot of these are timed, whether it's just like flicking a switch and having to get to a certain other side of a room, or you have to race something. There will definitely be a time and race component that we'll talk about in a second that dominates these levels. Other things, you will find like different powers or temporary abilities given by the level, like in the environment, often by like an NPC kind of walking back and forth. These are really cool because they temporarily change the moveset of your character. So you might get something like a double jump, or you might be able to, you know, jump in the air and like thrust forward or something, or you might interact with certain things differently in the environment, like TNT boxes or things like that. That will appear once you get the ability. So this reminds me a lot of like Super Mario Odyssey. In the specific worlds, like these characters or these abilities will appear because the level dictates you need to use them. And a lot of times when you get these abilities, you can't get out of them until you complete like a, you know, one-way loop sequence where you get to an area where like you're able to drop the ability. And often it's like a bishop, which as soon as you pass it will like bless you and remove the curse or whatever it might be. But you'll get different abilities, or you'll, I guess, occupy different personas. Like one of the first ones is you'll become a knight, and a knight, you know, when it's walking down a slant, it'll actually slide and pick up momentum. So that'll kind of dictate different platforming challenges there. You can pick up bombs. You might turn into a ghost. So each level is going to have its own thing. And maybe there are like three or four different instances in the level where you have access to that thing. And it might be to just progress. It might be to get a secret thing, anything like that. And then obviously enemies are going to be around. And most of the time you're going to have to just roll or speed through these. Sometimes you might need to grab them and throw them, like if you don't have enough momentum. Other times you're going to have enemies that are like pointing these pointy things at you. It might be a fork or a sword, and they're just walking forward. So you have to be mindful of that, because you can't get, if you get poked by it, it sort of stops you in your tracks. So you might need to jump over them and come around on the other side and then attack them in the opposite direction. Once you're at like really high speeds though, and some of these sequences will come about in the level, if there are like a ton of enemies in a row, or even if they have swords, if you're coming at a very high speed, it's almost like they can hear you coming and they get completely shaken. So whether they have a sword or not, if you're traveling at a certain speed, you can just kind of bulldoze through everything, which is really kind of cool. Most enemies will only take one hit. A lot of them aren't going to do anything special. They're just going to kind of be in the environment. Sometimes they might jump, or they might throw things if you let them sit long enough when you're in close proximity. But most of the time, they're just kind of standing there in the way. Sometimes there are single enemies. Other times there are lines of them or swarms of them. Again, often after a sequence of like a long stretch, so you can get enough momentum that you knock them down basically like bowling pins one at a time. But the good thing about this is sometimes, you know, they might be in a space where like you have to knock them out to keep going, but oftentimes you can just kind of avoid them or move past them. Again, they mainly function as an obstruction and not so much as like, you know, this challenging thing that you need to master. All right, let's talk about the general level progress. So as you get in a level, a lot of times you're going to have a series of paths that are sort of branching off. Sometimes they'll dead end, but basically it's going to be like a kind of a go until you can't. So you'll try like both ways in the beginning. One way might have a dead end, so then you wind up going the other way. And then you find that there's something that you get on the one side that allows you to unlock the way on the other side. So there's a lot of like unlocking things, finding keys or finding specific things that will unlock, so allow you to progress through the rest of the level. There's going to be a lot of collecting. So when you're in the level, just some basic things, you're going to find pizza toppings, almost like coins or wampa fruits or whatever, just sitting in the environment. So you're going to want to collect these. There might be special boxes in each level, like three of a certain thing in a jail box or a cage. You might find larger pizza toppings in the area. And a lot of these things that you're collecting are just going to add up to points that'll contribute to your ranking, which we'll talk about. But you're going to want to collect these as much as you can. And then there's a lot of optional things in each level that you're going to want to find. So one of them is like NPCs. So these little kind of personified pizza toppings that you can get from various places. Sometimes they're in secret areas. Sometimes it's from beating, you know, a specific sequence or a specific enemy that might be a little bigger, or solving like a small puzzle or a challenge. But a lot of times you're just going to find these guys and it's going to be kind of a big deal because there's like maybe four or five in a level. But then they'll start to follow you around as you progress through the rest of the level. Sometimes in a level, you'll find one of these NPCs and they will grant you the ability to unlock a special door somewhere in the level that unlocks a special collectible. That's, I think, only one in each level. It's like a food item. And then also, as you're going through each level, you'll have to find and complete three bonus stages. Again, this is optional, but this is part of like the collectathon in this game. And these bonus stages are these eyes. So you'll see as you go up to the door of a level before you access it, like you'll see these eyes floating around. I think they start closed. And that's just telling you that like you need to find this many of these in the area. And then once you find the eye and you just go up to it, it sucks you into like a little bonus stage. And it's a pretty small sequence, but it might have some challenging things where it has like some pizza toppings for you to like jump across and progress. And then you need to like get all the way back to the eye at the end. These can actually be really tough to find in the level. Once you do find them, some of them are pretty simple just to run through, but some of them are actually pretty tough. So all of this, all of these collectible things, just getting the general pizza toppings, also a lot of the optional things, these will all contribute to the ranking that you get after you do beat the level. And it's kind of just like an arcade system that you can track as you progress through the level. So anytime you pick up like pizza toppings or find an NPC in the top left corner, your ranking system will kind of enlarge and then it'll just be a letter grade. So at any point, you'll know like what your current ranking is for the level. And again, this is going to be kind of points based, but the more collectibles that you get, I think the less amount of damage you take. I don't know if like an S ranking requires like a no damage run, which is honestly not as difficult as you think. There are levels that I've gotten like 5 damage on or something like that. So it is possible. And I think maybe time is also linked into it, like how long it took you to finish the level. And then beyond that, there will be specific level challenges that I guess are kind of like trophies, if Nintendo had trophies. So I would imagine there are achievements on Steam that are tracked by these same challenges. And you can actually look at these if you go into the hub world. Regardless of what floor you're on, there should be one like signboard or something, or even like a specific room that you go in and it just says for each level, like whatever 3 challenges that you have to do in that level. It might be like not get hit. It might be touch all of these things. It could be a lot of various things. And then once you get to the end of the level, and for the moment, we'll call that like the farthest that you can progress, you're going to see like this giant face on like a tall obstruction. And all you have to do is touch it. Once you touch it, though, you're going to start the timed run for you to get back to the beginning of the level. Now, this is kind of stressful. I'm going to be honest. This is probably the toughest part of these levels. And it's pretty unforgivable. Like we'll talk about dying and stuff like that. But this is, for me, what was the most frustrating. And so once you hit the thing, the timer will start and you have to run back to the level. Now, what's interesting is in a lot of levels, you're not going to go back the same way that you came. And so as soon as you touch the thing, it might open up a new path. So you just start running in the direction that you feel that you're supposed to go, and enemies are going to spawn in as you're running. And so, again, you can avoid them, you can just blow right through them, whatever you want to do. You'll be going in a different direction because there are going to be specific blocks that have now animated and are blocking the path that you came from. Or you might actually, as you're going through the level, see some of these blocks not fully filled in. So that'll be sort of a key to you that says like, okay, once I get to the end, I'm not going to be able to go this direction. I'm going to have to go this direction because the blocks that are filled in as you go through the level in the beginning, they will be flopped to being transparent. So visually, it's pretty obvious what I mean when I'm saying that. But this is where the fast platforming and the precision in your movement is required. And where a lot of those little intricate things where you try to change momentum and you wind up falling off a platform, or you are trying to jump and stop running and you wind up going up another wall and now you have to go back in a loop. This can get a little crazy because you really only have like 2 minutes or so, somewhere between like 2 to 2.5 minutes to get back. Now, what is helpful is that as you're moving through, you will actually see clocks that are these currencies that you can grab. And I think that for each one you grab, it stops the clock for maybe, or maybe it adds like a second. I don't know. I'm not sure, but it doesn't do as much as you would hope it does. And again, I'm thinking like Crash 3, like when you're doing a time trial, like hitting the clocks, like gives you an extra second. I don't think it even gives you that much, but it's in your path, so you might as well pick them up. I think it does something. What's also helpful is there will be sort of these background NPC characters that are sort of like third base coaching you, waving you in the right direction, which is very helpful because when the clock is ticking and you're getting frustrated by the movements, or you know, you're running up a wall and you didn't mean to, just knowing the general direction of where to go is super helpful. And so you have to get all the way back to the door and go back through the door, and that will be beating the level. And then when you come back to the hub post level, you'll get a certain amount of money for beating the level, and that will also be based off of your ranking, how many of the NPCs you found, how many of the eyes or whatever, all kinds of things like that. So you'll get a certain amount of cash, and then eventually that's the cash or the currency that you're going to use to open up the boss level for that floor. So for that, think like DK64, like you need a certain amount of bananas in the level. Once you get them, like you can keep going, like you can retry the levels on the floor if you didn't get all the eyes or the collectibles or whatnot. But there's only so much that you need in order to progress. Now, we talked about levels. We talked about enemies. There are bosses. So each floor will have a boss level that you need to beat in order to progress to the next floor. Now, these are very different because when you go in the boss level, it's just the boss. You don't have to do platforming and progression and any kind of, you know, loop-de-loops or whatever. But what's also different is you will get a certain amount of HP, like hearts, but they'll be chef hats. And the boss will as well. So you will have 6, and the boss will have 9, but the boss has 2 faces. So you'll need to bring it down to 0, and then it'll get 9 more and bring it down to 0 again. Seems crazy, but it is doable. And what's different also is that it's not an extensive level. It's just a small arena. And depending on the boss, they'll have a different move set or varying mobility. Just something that you need to get used to. It's going to take a couple tries. A lot of it is going to be projectile dodging or use of potentially provided ability that you may have seen in one of the previous levels on that floor. You could be throwing things, shooting things during sort of like windows of vulnerability for the boss. When you're dodging and evading, whether it's shooting things or jumping back and forth, right out of like a DK Country boss that can be super mobile and have projectiles. Like, these are challenging fights, and I really do enjoy them. Once you get to the second phase, they're definitely more challenging. It is often a lot of the same method as the first phase, but there might be certain challenges. Like in one of the bosses I just did, the lights go out and you only see silhouettes of both the boss and the projectile. So it was a little more challenging, but it was a lot of the same. So I was able to conquer it. Again, a lot of these fights are tough, but fair. I think the most that I took with any of these bosses was maybe like 5 attempts, but it's a good challenge. And I like that it's different than the normal levels. And then finally, let's talk about accessibility. So we talked about falling in pits. This is interesting because it just gives you like a quick reset, like it'll bring you back to stable ground. When you get hit, you do lose some of your points in your currency, really not that much, but you don't like lose hearts or anything like that in the normal levels. So really the only time that you're dying is when you're at the end of a level and you hit the giant face and you have to run back to the beginning of the level. This is crazy because if you run out of time and you don't get back to the beginning, you have to redo the whole level. And I had to redo one level like 3 or 4 times, and I was getting really pissed off, but I was able to do it finally. I think the first few times I did it and died, I had gotten all of the collectibles. And then the last time where I made it all the way through, I missed one of them. So I'm going to have to go back and do that if I want to be the completionist. Be aware of that. That is the area that is the most frustrating. And also, like, the speed run is super difficult. So that's where the challenge certainly lies in this game. And some of the secrets or the collectibles, like in 1 or 2 levels that I've been through so far, some of the secrets are only accessible after you start the timer. So that can certainly add more stress to you. Most of the collectibles in the game are optional, which is nice. Like, you don't have to get everything in the game. Like I said, you can get a certain amount of currency and then just buy your way to the boss and then move on. But there are other things like costumes for some of the achievement challenges. So ways to customize your character. You can remap all the controls. I didn't know this at first. I just recently checked out the settings. But you can remap any button. That's really, really nice. And this might alleviate some of the tendency of the false moves or issues that you may have with doing things that you don't mean to. And there are some adjustments in the settings for the timer options. I don't think there's anything to remove the timer at the end to get back, but you might want to mess around with this. This might make some of the timed things a bit easier potentially. I don't know, but worth checking out. Let's talk about the vibe of Pizza Tower, and let's start with just themes and setting and maybe story. So this is all about pizza. So you are a pizza shop owner, and I think the goal of the game is to climb the tower to somehow save your shop. I don't know if there's like somebody evil that's doing stuff and, you know, messing with your ability to do your pizza shop, but that is the gist of it. And so a lot of the things that you're interacting with, the points that you're getting, the collectibles, the NPCs, these are all food related. So just the currency that you're collecting as you go through, it's going to be like pepperonis or mushrooms or little squares of cheese. You're going to run into tomatoes and sausage. These might be some of the bigger collectibles. These might also wind up being some of the enemies. Like, some of them are just like giant red balls that have feet and hands. You're going to see just a lot of pizza references, cheese, like things that you're breaking in the environment. They might look like blocks of cheese. It just really goes overboard with a lot of this stuff, everything being food related. And also, there's just a lot of over exaggeration. I mean, we'll eventually get into the visuals, but the mannerisms of characters, the reactions that they have, everything is just very visually trying to exaggerate. And it's quite comical, I would say. Even something as simple as like when you fall in a pit. So you fall in a pit and you get reset. But before you get reset back to the platform, it brings up like a technical difficulty screen of your character being injured in a chair and just some absurdity. So just over exaggeration, over the top. And of course, it being fast paced and that being high stress, that is not just the gameplay. That also shows up on the characters. Like, the characters just seem stressed and sort of play into a lot of short and quick humor. And so let's get into the visuals. I kind of described this at the top of the episode, but 90s cartoons through and through, with like a certain grittiness, a certain like grungy looseness to the drawings. I'm reminded a lot of Ren and Stimpy. I didn't watch it as much when I was growing up, but I played a lot of the games. Like, we had Ren and Stimpy's Time Warp. Some of the exaggerations visually of the characters. Also think like, you know, Attack of Killer Tomatoes, Earthworm Jim, even a bit more modern, like comparisons with Rick and Morty. Just a lot of looseness to the characters and their physicality and how they're drawn. Varied proportion and perspective. Like, you know, when a character is looking at you a certain way, like their right eye is just bulging or a lot bigger. Just that absurdity visually of character traits or physicality being completely distorted depending on the perspective. Really interesting, so 90s. And just absurdity in general, like the idea of personified food, not just the stuff you're collecting, but like the NPCs you're finding, like the enemies, things that you're talking to in the hub. Like, you're just talking to a pizza that has like, you know, mushrooms for the mouth and like pepperonis and it's winking. And you're looking around sometimes, you're like, where am I? Like, this is just absurd. And just other random things like mismatched features, asymmetry in a lot of the characters. Again, sometimes it's that proportion with perspective. Crazy things, bulging eyes, strained mannerisms, things like that. A lot of colors. definitely a lot of colors, a lot of reds and yellows, you know, certainly with the toppings of the pizza, but also contrasted with blues and greens, whether in the environment, like those blocks that will be transparent or filled in, depending on if you reach the end of the level and you're in the time sequence, like they do stand out because they're very blue. But other greens and browns in the environments, the obstructions, like the different boxes, if they're just like wood boxes, like they might be brown, like the metal cases, those are like a pretty staunch silver. And that really leads to a lot of differentiation visually of different objects or enemies, just depending on how that you can eliminate them. So visually, I just feel like there's a lot of good differentiation between you, the things that you should be interacting with or getting, and the things that you kind of want to target. The environments, the backgrounds are mostly easy to differentiate between the foreground. They do add a lot of depth. Secrets are not so easy. Like I said, breakable walls, you're not going to see like cracks in them a lot of times. Most of the time, it's just going to be location where it's like, there's probably something there. Or you might just run into a wall by accident that you happen to be able to break down and go all the way through to find a secret. I will also say like the layout of the different levels, like I said, some of them are like in tunnels and the space that you're trying to traverse is very small, but the scope of the view really helps you to see sort of like maybe where you're going or like a level up that might be coming up next or a level that you can't quite access yet. But then like if you progress further, you can see how it might lead back to that. So the scope of your view, I do think, helps you explore or at least be curious or kind of see where you're not able to get yet. And then finally, in terms of audio, this music just slaps. It is so good. I feel like there's a chiptune-esque-ness to it. I definitely got similar vibes to Dicey Dungeons, but that was more like sort of power techno. This is kind of more laid back and, you know, has a little bit of a hip hop feel mixed with a little funk. Like the opening music in the game on the main menu is, it sounds like somebody took like the Seinfeld music and like just put it to like a good beat and like some organs in the back to give some funk and like some 80s vibes to it at times. I just feel like this game has such good music. It gives me Hotline Miami vibes as well because it keeps like a groove, like a high energy, and just keeps you engaged, I feel. When you're in levels, sometimes it can come off as like a bit dungeon-like with some of the tracks. Reminds me of a lot of like Game Boy dungeon crawlers. But really the music is one of the things that I just latched onto immediately. And I actually did buy the vinyl and it just came and I am super excited to throw that on. Sound effects are also like a very, very major part of this. A lot of loud squishes when you bash enemies or when you pick up certain things, like that skirt of like you changing momentum is just so satisfying. Also, when you slam down, when you break things, like it really feels like a super immersive cartoon that you're playing in that is just alive. Like the things that you interact with make the sounds that you would expect them to. And again, alongside that over exaggeration, just really communicate that to you audibly. And it's so satisfying. Let's wrap up the conversation about Pizza Tower. This is a great game. I'm really having an enjoyable experience with this game. It is sensory overload. It has so much style and vibe, just absurd visually, over the top. And again, that kick-ass music, I just found this to be like such an enjoyable appreciation as I'm playing through. And that's not even considering the gameplay. Because what most people are going to see when they put this game on is just pizza aesthetic, and they're going to laugh and really just have a good time. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. This game is super challenging. It is a really good 2D platformer, but it's also unique. It has a lot of those basics of 2D platforming, but the Sonic speed mechanics, and it's not just like Sonic like it was on Sega Genesis, which is just like, oh, you go real fast and then you stop when you hit a wall and now you have to speed up again. Like, no, there's a lot of nuance to the way that that this works with the platforming. And I think at times it can be overwhelming and super fast paced, but I just find it to be so unique and refreshing that I really dig what it's trying to do. And also with the finding of the secrets, the collectathon, if you're a collectathon lover, like, you're really going to be into this game, even if it's a bit challenging for you. Again, that timed end of every level is super tough and is often going to be the frustration for a lot of people. But I still think it's just such a rewarding gameplay experience, as well as with fun boss fights. I think it really has a lot to offer. In terms of value, I think $20 is actually great for this game. I got it for $10. I think that's a steal. I think there's a lot of value here, and I'm only about halfway through this game, and I'm really loving my experience. I think this is going to be a great game for any 2D action platforming veterans. It has a very good pick up and play vibe to it. Like, I've definitely had a couple of nights where I just picked it up, played a level in bed, put it down, like, really enjoyed it. It's a game that you can definitely play in the short intervals. So if you're somebody that, you know, struggles for time or really just wants to have something that they go back to, it's definitely not a roguelike, but it definitely has a lot of that just pick up and play for as long as you want to collect or as many levels as you want to go through. And again, I do think the game might be challenging for some rookies in this space, but for anybody else who has played these games, as well as even if you're just a 90s cartoon nostalgia person and you really want to get into it from that aspect, I really think that even if it's challenging for you, you could get a lot out of this game. And so I do highly recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.